Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
One of my favorite colleagues at the Oregonian had a piece today that I read and I went, man, I got to get him on the show. Bill Monroe, the greatest outdoorsman. You heard of the greatest showman? He's the great outdoorsman. Bill Monroe of the Oregonian, he's been at it forever. I think he's going on 150 years of writing about the outdoors, hunting and fishing at the Oregonian. He's joining us now. Where are you right now? Are you in the wild?
No, sir. I wish I were in the wild. I'm quarantined from the wild. I'm in my office watching my bird feeder.
I love that. How has all of this affected the hunting and fishing world with the distancing? I see boats on the river still.
Well, they're on the river now, but they weren't to begin with. And actually, the coast is still pretty much closed down, so everyone's kind of chomping at the bit to get over there and find a boat ramp that's open so they can get out on the ocean. But that's opening slowly, and it looks like it's going to happen. And we just announced today that some of the Corps of Engineers areas up on the Columbia River are reopening. And so it started to be very, very frustrating. And it's kind of a tough year for salmon anyway. So a lot of people were pretty bummed, especially in Washington, where they just simply shut down hunting and fishing. But now Washington has reopened, and Oregon has relaxed its restriction on non-residents. So all of that is, you know, it's starting to reopen, and there's a whole lot of angst, is the best term for it, about whether or not people will keep their distance and not get too crowded at boat ramps and whatnot. But it's getting there. It'll happen. It's outdoors, hunting and fishing, and bird watching. As it turns out, bird watching is becoming very, very popular with so many people at home. But hunting and fishing is probably as socially distant activity as you can get.
Makes complete sense. Bill Monroe, you can read him on Oregon Live. You can read him in the Oregonian. Let's go back before I get into all my questions, because I got so many questions for you about fishing, and I have to ask you about the sea lions, because I always do, and so many other things. But before we get there, how did you get your start? If somebody said, you know, I'd like to be an outdoor writer, how did young Bill Monroe get his start, and how did you sort of find your groove with being like, hey, this is what I want to do?
I've been very fortunate all my life, John. Things just turned out right, and I feel like I'm blessed. After Vietnam, I decided the Navy wasn't going to simply give me a commission, so I had to go back to college, and I wanted to be a fish biologist, and began taking courses at Oregon State. And one day, my counselor asked me when I wanted to take organic chemistry. And like Clint Eastwood, a man's got to know his limitations. I balked at organic chemistry, and I had some good success with English classes in high school. And my grandmother put me through a writing class up in Fort Townsend, and I got high grades in that. So I figured, what the heck? I'll just switch to journalism, which I did. At that time, OSU had a journalism school. And just happened to luck out and get a job at the Gazette Times in Corvallis, and ultimately began writing an outdoor column on the side and learned how to take photos and cover beats. And then an opening came up at the Oregonian, and I applied for it. I had a good portfolio and just got fortunate. It's just sheer luck that got me into it. But I say that and knowing that you've got to be somewhere and you've got to be doing something in order to make the luck happen. And you know that.
Bill Monroe of the Oregonian, you've read him for years. You can still read him. He had a story today about how you can more or less get paid to go fishing. What's going on with the pike minnow, and why is there a bounty on this fish?
Well, the pike minnow, it's a native fish. The northern pike minnow is native to the Columbia system and all of its tributaries. And historically, before the coming of dams, they're a huge predator on small baby salmon and steelhead heading down the river to go to the ocean. But historically, they weren't a huge problem because of their numbers were pretty low in a fast rushing river like it was. But with the dams, the dams have created an ideal habitat for pike minnows, and their numbers have simply exploded, and they've been chomping salmon and steelhead above and below the dams. You know, what have I got, 36 of them, or however many they have, but all up and down the system. And so the Bonneville Power Administration put up some money one year, was back in the 90s, I think, early 90s, and began they call it a sport reward, but it's actually a bounty. It's a bounty on fish, which is unique to, I believe it's unique to the United States. Anyway, they put up a bounty on these pike minnows 9 inches or longer and pay people to go out and catch them. And some of the anglers have done very, very good. In fact, in a few years, a couple of them have gone a little bit over $100,000 each. But they're pretty dedicated, hardcore, you know, day and night fishermen. I can't believe they're married, but they're the exception, and they make a lot of money. But a lot of people simply just go out and catch fish and then send in their vouchers. And within 7 to 7 days to 7 to 10 days, they get the money back.
Now, I was reading your story. It says you can earn up to $8 per fish by turning in 9-inch or longer pike minnows between May 11th and September 30th. First 25 fish are worth $5 each. From 26 to 200, the bounty is $6. After 200, it's $8. And then this sentence jumped out at me. Biologists have tagged dozens of pike minnows worth $500 apiece. So are we saying that there's a sport in this? Like, if I catch one of these ones that's been tagged, I can get $500?
That's it. Tell your daughters. You go out and catch a fish with a tag in it, and it's worth you know, maybe the first couple of weeks of their college education.
You've got
they do that on purpose, and the information helps them get an idea of where these fish go and where they're being caught, it's always, you know, data is very important to research.
Somebody in the story, the winner last in 2019, or the Top Gun, earned $53,000 catching fish. That's not a bad part-time job.
Surprise. That's lower than the Top Gun usually in the last several years. $53,000. Yep.
When's the best day? What's the best kind of weather bait? What should I be using if I'm catching these?
Well, if you also read the story, John, you'll see that it's almost a moving target. You've got times of the year where it's better in some places than in others. June is coming up. The third week of June is the peak spawning time for these critters, and they get in close to shore. And They're broadcast spawners, so you've got a whole bunch of males around one female, and they're fairly easy to catch there, especially from the shoreline. The baits, I've heard, chicken liver, we caught them on herring when we're trolling for salmon. Worms, earthworms, anything with a lot of smell. The fish have an extraordinary sense of smell, and they'll respond to it. And, there's a lot of grub. If you look on the website and in the store, you'll see there's a pikeminnow.org website, and there's a wealth of information there about how to, where to, when. There are maps showing the best areas that that these fish are caught in, all up and down the Columbia and Snake Rivers.
I love it. I love that there's a bounty on this fish. Bill Monroe of the Oregonian with us. Before I cut you loose, let's talk about the sea lions. Has that been addressed? I hear every once in a while from fishermen who are frustrated with the sea lions in the river. What's going on? What's the latest there?
Well, before you cut me loose, I just want to mention, there's something called a bald-faced hornet.
Yes.
Are you aware of that?
The murder hornet.
And he writes for the Oregonian, thank God. the sea lions. Okay, sea lions. The California sea lions, there are two kinds, California and Stellars. Californians have been trapped, they were being trapped last year and this year at Willamette Falls, early on at Willamette Falls, and taken away and euthanized. And as a result, the winter steelhead, the endangered winter steelhead into the Willamette Valley number, the number of those steelhead has climbed significantly. So that's having an effect.
Good.
However, when coronavirus hit, the way they capture these things and the distance that the biologists and the teams have to work is so close that they weren't able to maintain the parameters of protecting themselves from coronavirus. So they've suspended it. They are working, and they're hoping by the end of this month to get back to a realm where they can safely trap and euthanize California sea lions. Meanwhile, the formerly endangered Stellar sea lions are no longer endangered, and the state has applied to the federal government for permission to capture the large, and they're much larger, Stellar sea lions, and euthanize those. That permission will come through hopefully sometime between August and November, and then they'll start trapping the big ones. Right now, there are very few Californians around. It's mostly Stellars that are there are a few at the Willamette Falls and especially up at Bonneville Dam. But when they're able to capture those and euthanize them, they'll be saving a whole bunch of very large spawning sturgeon. The big Stellars go after spawning sturgeon that the Californians choose to ignore. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. We're waiting on permission to take Stellars, and we're waiting on ways to capture and euthanize California sea lions safely under the coronavirus rules.
Bill Monroe of the Oregonian, read him on Oregon Live. It's great to hear your voice, Bill, and I appreciate you making time for us and sharing your expertise. I'm going to bring you back on, and we'll figure out what's going on later in the season, if you don't mind.
No, I'd be happy to wait. Yep.
All right. Bill Monroe, thank you, man. Great to hear his voice. He's terrific, does a great job at what he does. And I used to love back in the day when we were at the old Oregonian building at 1320 Southwest Broadway, downtown Portland, being in the office, and here would be Bill Monroe, decked out in some of his outdoor gear with good stories to tell. He is the expert on it. He knows a lot about that stuff and has made a good career out of covering it like nobody else does. He's the expert when it comes to that stuff. All right, leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. The 2 at 2 is coming up. You want to go behind the scenes with this radio show? You want to get the weekly newsletter that I'm putting out every Thursday? There's only one way to get it. You got to text BFT to 484848. That's how you get it. You text, and then it'll prompt you for your email, and then you will get the newsletter every Thursday delivered to you. And when we do ticket giveaways, you'll get it. And when there's breaking news, you'll get it first. I had a listener reach out and ask about the Back in the Day segment we did last week. I think it was Friday's radio show that we did the Back in the Day segment. And what you have to do, if you want to find any of the old shows or interviews, like even Myers Leonard interview earlier today, or any of the interviews, Bill Monroe, who was just on The Great Outdoors Writer, or yesterday, Lee Steinberg on the show and Jonathan Smith on the show, you just have to subscribe to the podcast. Apple Podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Alabama Adriana does the individual interviews and does the entire show. So if you were looking for the Back in the Day segment, you would grab the entire show from last Friday, and it would be in and around the guests that were on Friday's show. So there you have it. That's how you get the podcast. All right, every day on the program, we do the 2 at 2. It's the two biggest things going on, and it happens to hit today at almost 2:22.
The 2 at 2.
Governor Kate Brown gets the headlines today as she has announced phase one for getting back to normal. The get back to normal plan is what I would call it. Governor Brown is saying that you should pump the brakes a little bit on large gatherings. If you have a community gathering or a camp or a sporting event planned for the summer months, you should probably cancel it or seriously consider modifying it. She's also mentioned that September at the earliest, through September, at the earliest, that there would be no large-scale events, including sporting events. This was greeted by the University of Oregon with a nod and, hey, we know where we get our funding look, as the University of Oregon Athletic Department issued a statement basically saying that the health and wellness of their athletes and fans should come first. The governors are calling the shots. That's my takeaway. Not the commissioners, not the athletic directors, not some sports radio host. It's going to be the governors in each individual state that determine when we get back to work, how we get back to playing, who could sit in a restaurant and who can't. Keep an eye on that. I think it's important. Meanwhile, with her saying essentially that you can have no fans at sporting events, that really does throw a wrinkle at the NBA's plan to get back to work. If you are somebody who thinks that the NBA should be getting back to work, how are you going to do that without fans in the arenas? I don't think that even if the practice facilities are open, even if the players want to play, even if television wants to broadcast the games, NBA teams are largely reliant on the huge revenue stream that is the games being played. I'm skeptical it's going to happen. That should make CJ McCollum, Blazers guard, and Mavericks owner Mark Cuban happy. Those two headlining today's news as well. This is my second my 2 at 2. McCollum did an interview with Yahoo Sports in which he expressed some confidence in the steps the Blazers have taken. But he's also saying, look, these are optional workouts. He's pleased with the caution. He's pleased with the structure. But you have to think at some point, when there are drastic measures that need to be taken, is it really worth it? It's either safe or it's not safe. Mark Cuban, speaking on ESPN radio show, said, look, seriously, if you're a player, who do you trust with your life? If you're a coach or a trainer, that's essential personnel for getting something back together. Do you trust the hotel? Do you trust the technology? Who do you trust with your life? That's a big question to ask. We make business decisions like that every day. Do you stay in? Do you go out? What do? Where do you go for your groceries? We're all doing it. I'm skeptical that the NBA will play games. I'm skeptical that it will matter in the end. And I think there are a whole bunch of teams that are going to go public in the coming weeks saying, look, it's just not worth it. That's our 2 at 2. Two biggest things going on in sports, both related to the same issue. I do think that, you know, we heard Jeff Van Gundy on this show 4 or 5 weeks ago. Came on this radio program, talked about the fact that he thought the NBA was going to be done. He didn't think they would play again. Now you got Mark Cuban saying he's not going to open his practice facility. You've got CJ McCollum going, at some point you got to wonder if it's worth it. If you're having to go to such measures, is this really something we should be doing? I joined that chorus. I have believed for a long time that the NBA should bag the 2019-2020 season, write it off, like school kids are asked to write off the school year, like a lot of us have been asked to take pay cuts, like some people have lost their jobs. It's just not worth it at some point to put a game in front of everything else. If you want to play the games with no fans in the stadium, if you want to have social distancing within the stadium, if you want to go through all these complex jump through the hoop initiatives that are all so complicated, I do agree with those who in the end go, you know what? Should we really be doing this if this is that difficult? 503-417-7575. Where do you stand on that issue? This has been a fast-moving show. It has moved at some points too fast for my comfort. In fact, I had the Myers-Leonard interview early in the program that breezed by. I thought he was really good in talking about sort of, you know, his growth and maturity and where he's at as a athlete and a person. I also think you've got to look at, we had Rick Riz on the show who talked about, you know, as a broadcaster, you know, he obviously wants to get back to broadcasting baseball games for the Mariners. He's the voice of the Mariners. Of course he wants to get back to games. But he's coming on the show to talk about a blood drive that's going on, you know? So I think in the end, if you are somebody who is eager to get sports going, I get it. I totally understand it. But in the end, also, I think we also have to kind of look back and go, you know what? There are things more important than sports that are happening in the world all the time. All right, much more ahead. My wife will pop into the studio. I got some breaking news in the Pac-12 I'll share with you. It's minor, but it's interesting. And we'll also talk about the business of basketball, the business of sports. At what point do you believe that unless the games can make money for the sports entities, unless college football can makes money on the games, that it will not play the game?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.